Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED. From KQBD in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Some universities, including MIT, Yale, and UT Austin, are requiring applicants to submit SAT and ACT scores again, reversing their pandemic-era admissions policies. And the LA Times editorial board last month called on UCs to do the same, citing research suggesting the tests are good predictors of college success, and even a more equitable metric than a student's GPA. The UCs and Cal States are so-called test blind, meaning they won't consider scores even if submitted. We take a closer look at why the tests are beginning to make a comeback and hear from you. Do you think California's universities should reinstate them? Tell us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Even before COVID-19, dozens of colleges had made it optional for students to submit their SAT and ACT scores due to equity concerns. But it was when the pandemic made it hard for students to access testing sites that universities did it in massive numbers, with the University of California and Cal State systems adopting a policy of not looking at standardized test scores, even if they're submitted. But a handful of highly competitive schools are now bringing the requirement back, citing research that shows the scores can be a meaningful way to determine college readiness and raising equity concerns related to other factors in the admissions process. So will this mean the eventual return of the SAT to California's admissions? We take a closer look this hour, and joining me first is journalist Jeff Salingo, whose books include Who Gets In and Why? A Year Inside College Admissions, and his new piece for New York Magazine is called What Does an SAT Score Mean Anymore? Welcome back to Forum, Jeff.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you. So today, basically the approach to the SAT and ACT by U.S. colleges and universities appears to have fallen into roughly three categories. Can you describe those?
Yeah, so we have kind of test required, which is probably for most of us, I'm a Gen Xer, right, is the one that most of us were kind of used to, you required a test. The second one, and the biggest bucket now, is test optional. And this grew tremendously during the pandemic when students couldn't get a test, which basically means you could take a test, you could have a score, and you decide as the applicant whether to submit it or not. And then the third is test free or test blind, which is what California does and a few other schools. It's not a huge group besides UC and Cal State. And that is, even if you take a test and you submit it, we're not looking at it.
And yes, while the pandemic and mass cancellation of in-person testing and so on prompted the requirement for SAT and ACT scores be dropped, optional or so on, at least temporarily, you say there had already been growing disenchantment with the test before 2020. Can you talk about that and about the intersection of COVID and skepticism about the test?
Yeah, I mean, there were test optional actually was a thing, and test free was a thing before the pandemic. And I think that many people think that the test, whether it's the ACT or the SAT, according to research, predicts first year grades, and it helps predict success in college, but not that much more than high school grades. And so the thinking among a lot of admissions officers is requiring the test really worth it? It's a high stakes test. We know that the scores on the test are highly correlated with family income. And as a result, is it really worth it at a time when we're trying to diversify our institutions to require this test if it's not really going to show us that much more about success in college than a high school transcript will alone?
But some universities are now bringing the test back. You wrote about MIT being among the first to do that in 2022, and others have followed. We've got Dartmouth and Yale and UT Austin and Brown, Northwestern. Why did MIT decide to bring the test requirement back?
Yeah, and MIT didn't really truly go test optional. They said if you had trouble getting a test in 2020, 2021, we wouldn't necessarily take the score. The reason why they decided to bring it back is because they have a very specialized curriculum that's heavy on math. And what they were seeing back 20, 30 years ago, when they would accept students with lower SAT, particularly math scores, who tended to come from underrepresented minority students, is that those students didn't perform as well at MIT, and more so didn't graduate. And so their worry was that if they truly went test optional and stayed test optional, that they would be bringing in students that wouldn't succeed at MIT. They wouldn't succeed grade-wise, but more than that, they wouldn't be retained and graduate on time, particularly among underrepresented students. And so they felt they really needed the test as a result. I think that is the case. And part of the problem is that many of these other institutions lately, Yale, Dartmouth, and others that have brought back the test, they have not been as transparent about the data, about why they're bringing it back. Hmm. But I think there's two reasons. One is I think they're seeing some of the same things that MIT did. But they also have gotten a ton of applicants as a result. Applications to highly selective colleges in the last 4 years are up 30%+. And even as MIT told me, our admissions office didn't grow by 30%. So just going through all these applications, many of which are not really that competitive, especially without test scores, seems to, I think, some of these admissions officers as kind of a waste of time. And if we could tamp down the number of applications a little bit by requiring a test again, we're going to do that.
So the more the test is required, the more it's a barrier typically to people actually applying to the school.
Yes. Basically, what happens is some students don't apply at all because they don't want to take the test. Or what ends up happening, and this happened before the pandemic, is schools would advertise their average test scores, or they would advertise what the top 25% of scores were, the middle 50%. They still do that, but it only includes those who submitted scores. And so the scores thus are inflated. You have really no idea what it takes to get in. So what they would like to do is bring back where everybody is submitting a score. And so this way you can see, I don't even have a score that's close to that. I'm not even going to apply.
We're talking with Jeff Salingo about whether or not universities and colleges should bring back standardized testing in far greater numbers than they have so far. UCs and Cal States became test-free a couple of years ago, meaning that they will not look at test scores, even if submitted. And I want to hear what you think, listeners. Would you like to see the standardized tests come back? What was your experience with standardized tests? Most of us had to take them, as Jeff was pointing out before. The email address is forum@kqed.org. You can find us on our social channels at @kqedforum on X, our digital community on Discord. We're on Instagram. You can call us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. So Jeff, one of the things I was struck by was that MIT said that after they brought back the testing requirement, they admitted the most diverse class they've ever had.
Yes, they did.
So they're attributing that to the test, or?
No, they're not attributing that to the test necessarily. Uh-huh. But the feeling is that the other thing the test does for institutions is it helps them find students. So there's a thing called student search. So colleges can buy the names of test takers, and they can buy them by zip code. They could buy them by test score. So you can say, I want everyone who scored over a 1500 from these zip codes. Well, we know the U.S. is highly segregated. So if you want to find underrepresented minority students, and certain, you could basically say, okay, I'm going to look at all these zip codes, and everybody who scored over a 1500, I'm then going to buy their name and mail to them and encourage them to apply. So again, without students taking tests, it was harder, it wasn't impossible, but it was harder to find students as a result. So that's another reason why colleges would like students to take the test, because it's kind of finding that needle in the haystack type of thing, where you could find those highly talented students who might not go to well-resourced high schools. You're probably not going to go recruit at that high school, but now suddenly they hit it out of the park on the SAT or ACT, and now suddenly you're in their orbit.
I see. Well, one of the things that has happened, though, is many schools have decided, the vast majority have decided to extend their test optional approaches. So why? Why are they not, despite some of this data that some of these elite schools are citing, or at least MIT is citing, I guess, as you say, not all have been very transparent about it. Why are they not going back to requiring it?
So they haven't gone back yet. What they tell me when I ask them is that the data shows they've been tracking students who came in with test scores and without test scores. And the data shows that the students without test scores are performing just as well as the students with the test score in college. So I think they want a little bit more data to prove that out. The other thing is when less selective colleges want to have more flexibility in picking a class. And so there may be students that they really want. And if they required a test score, maybe that student has a 1200 or 1100 or whatever score on the SAT. SAT, by the way, is 1600 is the max. Well, if you're a less selective school and you want to take that student and you had to now report their test score, suddenly your average, the more of those students you accept, suddenly your average comes down and you look, you know, maybe you look less selective. You don't look as good because your average SAT score is a 1400 rather than the school down the street, which is a 1500. So a lot of this is around perception of value and perception of prestige in higher ed. Dartmouth and Yale, because they get so many high quality applicants, most of whom have a perfect SAT score anyway, they could kind of get away with this, where if you're less selective, you want to have more flexibility in picking your class.
Well, Noelle on Discord writes, don't students need to take test prep classes to do well on the SAT or ACTs? Those who can't afford to pay for them are at a disadvantage. That was a commonly cited issue with the SAT and ACT ahead of time. I'm curious what the data bears out in terms of the advantage that test prep and paying for tutors gives.
It does. I mean, the number one predictor of success on the SAT or ACT is family income, right? The higher the family income, the better are you going to do on the test. Another predictor is test prep, right? It has been shown, even by the College Board itself, that test prep does increase your score. And I think, again, this goes back to why some colleges and universities are saying, is it worth it, right? Is the juice worth the squeeze? If we're going to require students to take a test, there's all this test prep they're going to have to do, all this studying, all this anxiety that they're going to have to put into this test. And if the results are going to show that, you know, they're still going to succeed here, even without a test score, is it worth it? And I think that's the debate that's happening right now in higher ed. Now, some others will say, I think, especially when I talk to parents and counselors of students who do well on the test and are not getting into schools that they used to get into, they're starting to say, hey, wait a second, bring back the test, because suddenly now these schools are accepting students who 5-10 years ago, they probably wouldn't have accepted because their test score wasn't high enough.
We're talking with Jeff Salingo. Jeff Salingo is author of several books, including Who Gets In and Why, A Year Inside College Admissions, and also There Is Life After College and College Unbound, The Future of Higher Education and What It Means for Students. He recently wrote a piece in New York Magazine called What Does an SAT Score Mean Anymore? Talking about the mass pivot to a test optional approach and how now some schools are starting to bring the test requirement back. And you, our listeners, are joining the conversation with your questions about standardized tests and the role that they play today, whether you'd like to see standardized tests come back. We'd also like to hear about your experiences with taking standardized tests and whether or not it affected, you think, your college application. The email address is forum@kqed.org. The phone number 866-733-6786. Our social channels are at KQED Forum. More after the break. I'm Mina Kim. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. A handful of elite universities have started requiring students to submit their SAT and ACT scores again, reversing their pandemic-era admissions policies. But here in California, public colleges, including the UCs and Cal State schools, remain test-free and won't consider a student's scores even if they are submitted. We're talking with Jeff Salingo about what an SAT score means in this kind of environment, whether or not we could see other schools bringing back the SAT requirement and why some have. And you are joining the conversation with your questions and comments. Let me go to Jason in Santa Rosa. Jason, you're on.
Hi. So I graduated high school in 2012, and I did not go to college afterwards, partially because I didn't take the SAT in college or in high school because I was a little nervous about the math portion. I was behind in math, and so I didn't take the test, and consequently, I didn't really apply to schools. I'm now in community college and transferring into the UC system, and it's been a great process. I'm curious about how colleges view the math portion of the standardized test, and if you're going into non-math related fields, if they take the test back, are they not going to be necessarily like counting students who don't perform as well in that area?
Jason, thanks. Jeff? Jeff Salingo, are you with us?
Yes, it's a great question. And I think among the more highly selective schools, they care a lot about math. It's something that I saw when I was reporting who gets in and why, where I sat inside the admissions offices of three institutions, including the University of Washington, Emory University, and Davidson University. And one of the things I saw that even for kids who were majoring in the humanities, they really did care about the math curriculum and to some extent the math score, because they felt like math is part of the curriculum anyway, even if you're in the humanities. And they also saw it as like a gatekeeping function. You have to remember, most of these schools get way, way many more applicants than they have seats, and they have to use some sort of structure to like essentially weed students out. And unfortunately, in my opinion, because I didn't do that well in math in high school either, is that they take math in a much more serious way, even for non-math majors. Now, again, that's mostly at the highly selective colleges, less so the more you move down the selectivity matrix.
Jeff, you're article poses the question of what a score means anymore. And I'm curious if you could just remind us at its peak what it did mean to colleges and universities, what they thought it was a reflection of.
Well, they thought it was a reflection of a kind of a national, international standard, right? We have 25,000 different high schools in the U.S. alone. They all, as any of your listeners know, at one school, a 4.0 is the top, and at another school, it could be a 4.6, a 4.8. I mean, it's crazy when you look at the GPAs now, given how they weight these things. And so colleges really saw it as kind of this evening mechanism across high schools. And for students, the SAT score, as I mentioned earlier, you could look at the SAT scores of admitted students at a college, and you could see the average SAT score for the top 25% of scorers, for the middle 50%, for the bottom 25%. And so it was really a signal to you, the applicant, oh, I'm not even in the bottom 25%. My score is lower than that, so I shouldn't even apply. Now the problem is, all of that is kind of messed up, right? So now colleges have to rely more on the high school curriculum and more on the high school transcript. If they don't have a test score, do they trust the transcript that they're getting in terms of rigor? And then for students, they have to try to figure out like, well, the only students now sending scores in are those who perceive their scores are high. So the bottom 25% of test scorers at that school, it's kind of a high score now. And so you have no idea what your score means as a result.
Yeah. You've talked about the variation in how schools may grade their students. And I've been hearing that as an argument in favor of bringing back the tests that I think the LA Times in their editorial basically said that grade inflation is a big problem at affluent schools, for example. And the other things that have been pointed to is that other parts of the admissions process that may have more weight now as a result of the test scores going away, things like essays, right? There can be extensive editing on these essays or extensive coaching on these essays, especially from private school counselors.
You could even use AI now.
Right. You could even use AI. You can participate in more extracurricular activities, right? Things like that. Those kinds of things that are part of an application are actually, even more biased than the test. What do you think?
I mean, the problem is that looking at an application, the entire thing in some ways can be gamed, right? So there is grade inflation. There are teachers and counselors who really won't give a bad recommendation because they don't want to, because it's just not worth it. You're right about extracurricular activities, especially in more affluent areas. You could spend a lot more time piling up the extracurricular activities. You could, as we talked earlier, if you submit a test score, you could do a lot of test prep. They also allow super scoring. So you could take the test multiple times and basically pick your two best scores on math and verbal and submit those. So in some ways, the entire application is curated in a way by certain students that you don't really know what you're getting on the other side. So should you bring back the test score for that? Perhaps, but you know, these other pieces also are gamed in some way as well. And I'm just not quite sure you're ever truly getting an accurate reflection of the applicant on the other side.
Well, Jeff, I know you need to leave us. So I'm just curious what you think about California's approach, the approach by the UCs and Cal States to go essentially what they call test blind.
You've asked probably the most debated question next to like Mideast peace and abortion. I really do feel like, you know, you're either in favor of the test or you're against the tests, and the other side will never see what it is. And so I do think I'm a big fan of at least being transparent about it. If you're not going to take the test, then tell students what it takes to get in. And I think that's the problem now in the UC system, particularly, and even in test optional schools, is that they say, well, we don't accept the test or we're not going to look at it. But by the way, you now have to do these 12 other things to get in. And even if you do those 12 other things, you might still get a rejection. And I hear from parents and students all the time in California that, okay, so now UC is not taking the test, but we don't know what it takes to get in. Is it a 4.0 average? Is it this? Is it that? Like, I think what whether UC brings the test back or not, what I do think would be helpful is if they're much more transparent about the things that students need to do in high school, very specifically, to get into a UC school. I think that's the issue. And the problem is they're unwilling to do that, I think, because they have so many more applications than they have seats. And so to give students or parents any sense of what it takes to really get in, I think then they're going to be putting themselves into a situation where students are going to reach that bar and they won't have enough seats for them.
Well, Jeff, thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it.
It was great to be here. Thanks for everything.
You can check out Jeffrey Salingo's latest piece, What Does an SAT Score Mean Anymore, in New York Magazine. I actually want to bring into the conversation now Eddie Como, education professor and associate dean of graduate education at the University of California, Riverside, who played a really big role in, well, advising, though UC ultimately did not end up adopting the standard recommendations that Como and his faculty committee came up with, but advising UC's approach to standardized tests. Professor Como, really glad to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So when you co-chaired the faculty committee tasked with determining how UC used standardized test scores and whether they should continue using SAT and ACT scores as a factor in admissions, what did your committee find and ultimately recommend?
Yes, there was a committee largely assembled of faculty across all 10 undergraduate programs. And over several months, we convened and looked at data, made decisions that were really data informed. And ultimately, we put forth a recommendation among the majority of the committee members that there is some benefit to using test scores as one factor among many when it came to admission decisions. And so there, for the most part, many of those members supported that idea based on the data. And of course, with UC, there is a shared governance component. And the final result ended in, although the recommendation was put forward, both the president then and then the regents decided against standardized testing for a number of reasons. One, most importantly, they saw standardized testing as a barrier largely to vulnerable students who were gifted and talented, but saw that as a way that didn't allow for greater access to UC.
And did you agree with that ultimate decision?
Well, you know, my work has evolved over time. Depending on how we use standardized testing, there could be some benefits to it. But my research overall would suggest that there are other ways of looking at students holistically and not solely relying on standardized tests. How do we broaden how we look at academic success? And what might that look like on a larger scale? And so, yes, there was support for how that might be considered in admissions, but overall, I felt that there were more cost the benefits associated with continuing with this standardized tests and admissions.
Well, we have listeners weighing in, and this listener writes, I think SAT should be optional as an either-or choice if the test score tells a different and better story than GPA. Neurodivergent students may have great GPAs but struggle with standardized time testing. The opposite may happen with disadvantaged students. And Robert writes, the SAT is one more piece of information colleges can use to judge students. Without them, and with so many students with near-perfect grades, the schools are relying too much on essays to differentiate students, and I feel like essays are less fair than tests, as it's easier to get help on an essay than a test. It's possible to let someone else write your essays, which we know will happen, and worst of all, colleges are picking good writers, cutting out many students who are brilliant in STEM subjects, but not great writers. And David writes, why are we asking the students what they prefer? Many students are happier and learning more by attending Cal State universities, which no longer accept test scores, than students at the most elite universities. The overemphasis on getting into the most elite schools is not healthy for students or their education. And we are asking students what they think. We'd love to know if you would like to see a standardized test come back, whether you feel like it helped you or whether you feel like it's something that may hurt your application in the future. 866-733-6786 is the number. Email address forum@kqed.org. Our social channels are on X, Instagram, or on our digital community on Discord. We're at KQED Forum. And also just tell us if you took the SAT, what your experience was like. Can you remind us, Dean Como, the admissions process for UCs? It's a two-step process, right?
Yes, that's correct. Students complete an application. There's also a set of insight questions that students respond to a prompt that gives us a sense of their overall profile, their pre-college experiences, and even how they are thinking about societal issues. And so the application is you've got the online application with the, you know, some other supplemental materials that are considered by an admissions committee. But there are specific criteria. The criteria and how they make decisions vary across the 9 undergraduate campuses in terms of how they admit students. Some campuses, are, as we know, are a little bit more selective than others across the 9 undergraduate campuses.
But am I right in that if you are in the top 9% of your high school class, you are guaranteed a UC admission somewhere?
That is absolutely correct. You are guaranteed admission to one of the 9 campuses. And then how these campuses make decisions are determined by their institutional goals, right? Whether it's UCLA at the higher end or a UC Riverside or Merced at the lower end in determining admissions. But yes, students are guaranteed admissions if they meet a minimum standard.
Let me go to caller Elizabeth in Menlo Park. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. My daughter graduated from high school in June of 2023, and she's now in college, and it's just, she did really well on the SAT. So she ended up getting in the high 1500 and was really frustrated that most of the colleges she wanted to get in, especially UC, wouldn't even look at her SAT score, which meant it put more pressure on her high school grades and her extracurriculars during a time when she was a freshman during the pandemic, plus she had some mental health issues. It just was a lot of things happening at once. And so for her, it just felt like, well, wait, I want to go to a UC. I want to go to maybe even Cal State, like Cal Poly. And it was just this thing where I did as best I could on this test. I did great on this test, and no one's going to be able to appreciate it, you know, because there's so much pressure on the essays and on all the other aspects of the application process. So even though it's, quote, for, you know, it's supposed to be helping disadvantaged kids, it puts a disadvantage on, you know, it, surprisingly enough, kids that actually do well on the SAT as well.
Elizabeth, thanks. Eddie, I would love to get your response to Elizabeth's experience or what you think about what Elizabeth is describing here.
So when we think about admissions decisions, there are a number of indicators. As we know, there's much emphasis placed on grades as well as test scores. And so They're also a holistic review process where decisions are made within the context of opportunities. And so depending on your school, depending on your location, decisions are made based on you know, the opportunities that are afforded to you. And so when we think about how we're admitting students, we want students that are competitive. Well, we want students that can demonstrate some level of competitiveness, how they might enrich the campus experience. And so looking at the file in its entirety is important. And one may score really high on a test, but we also are considering other factors, right, when we make those decisions.
Yeah. Well, Eddie, what are UC's admissions goals? What do they consider ideal with regard to the group of students that they're admitting to their class in terms of the goals that it is achieving for UC?
You know, I'd like to think, and I'm not in on those decisions about, you know, institutional goal, but my research would suggest that, you know, yes, we want students who are competitive, who can enrich the campus experience. We want students that are able to matriculate and graduate within a reasonable time frame. But I also think there's a large emphasis more recently, particularly when schools are thinking about readopting tests and going, you know, from test optional back to requiring a test. They're talking about how, you know, tests demonstrate that it does diversify the campus, right? The student body. And that's certainly a goal for campuses to ensure that their student body, particularly at our public institutions, are reflective of their communities.
So diversity is a big goal, as well as, I think, essentially you describe it as competitiveness and excellence. I'm sure these schools also want to identify those kids that are going to, you know, invent the next thing that will cure a major illness or win Nobel Prizes or so on and so forth. So in starting this process of going test-free, do you know if there's any evidence or data that points to whether or not this policy has been more effective at UC's reaching their goals of diversity and competitiveness?
Yeah, I would say so. The year 2021, the Regents decided to phase out standardized testing in UC. One data point I think was interesting, in the year that they phased it out, we had record number of applicants. And then even more specific, in fall of 2023, UC admitted the largest number of underrepresented racially minoritized students. Huh. So test scores can deter even highly qualified students applying, and I'd like to think that in a test-free environment at UC, we've certainly seen some of these barriers that aren't there, largely because students feel like that this is a viable option for me.
We'll have more after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mina Kim. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. In California, public colleges, including the UCs and Cal State schools, remain so-called test blind. It won't consider a student's scores even if submitted. And Eddie Como, professor and associate dean of graduate education at UC Riverside, co-chaired a faculty committee that helped UC determine what and how it was using standardized tests, what they were using them for, and whether they should continue using them. Ultimately, UC's decided, of course, on this policy of not considering them in their admissions applications. But a handful of schools are starting to bring them back, and we're learning why and hearing from you about your thoughts on whether or not they should be brought back as well. Before the break, Eddie, was interesting because basically it sounds like the jury's out on whether requiring the test or not requiring the test could create a more diverse student body, because, as of course we heard the earlier example of MIT saying that requiring the test allowed for them to have a more diverse student body. I want to bring into the conversation now Anna Isaki Smith. Anna is author of Make College Your Superpower. It's not where you go, it's what you know. Anna, thanks so much for being with us. Hi, Anna, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can now. And the other thing that you probably heard, Anna, was the call from Elizabeth saying that it would have been nice for her child to have been able to submit their high test score. So I'd love to get your thoughts and your assessment of the test optional option that some schools have taken and whether or not that's the solution.
Yeah, I have to say the universities that are reinstating the SAT test, as Jeff mentioned earlier, they can afford to do so because they're deluged with applications. I mean, they're just, the volume has increased exponentially. For, I would say, the majority of universities across the country, enrollments is a problem. The last thing they need is to erect more obstacles to enrollments, of which the SAT is both an academic and a financial barrier. So I'm not directly addressing that the parents' question, but I'm not sure that there will be much change, at least not in the near term, across the country with regards to the SAT test being reinstated. I also want to add here, which might be of interest to the audience who have not yet taken the test, it is now digital. It is a 2-hour digital adaptive test, which may bring a whole nother slew of, I don't know, of issues to the table that have not been considered before.
So what are some of the impacts, either intended or unintended, of going this route of making tests optional in admissions packages? I feel like Jeff was hinting about how it has scrambled the process, maybe both for universities, but really for families as well, as they're deciding whether or not to take the test or to submit the scores.
I mean, for many, it is a cost. It's a cost factor. I mean, it does cost money to take the test. It does cost money, unless you decide to send your scores before knowing what the score is to universities. You have to pay to send the scores to the colleges that you want to attend. And I think there's the issue of, I mean, one of the reasons behind the test optional move is that wealthy families can afford the test prep, which can be key to a student's success. I spent many years living in Asia, and there was a lot of test prep going both at cram schools as well as at sort of boot camps. So I think the test optional move was really to democratize the application process, although for some students, as the caller said, it does eliminate metric for some students that do very well in tests.
Well, Amelia writes, I'm a current student at UCLA. I applied without submitting an SAT score, and that actually really helped me. I'm not a great test taker, but I have a lot of drive in school. Not having to submit a score allowed me to feel comfortable applying to schools where I could show my personality and my unique interests. If SAT scores were required, I would have been less likely to apply to schools like UCLA because I would have been intimidated by my lower scores. For California students who want to apply to the UCs and outside of the UCs, do you know, Anna, if students who are submitting test scores have any kind of edge in that process, or if there really isn't much data around that yet?
You know, that is such a great question. I mean, and I think I would put that in the silo as to whether or not it's better to get a B in regular bio, an A in regular bio or a B in AP bio. You know, I mean, these are issues that students and their families ponder. And I don't think there really is a definitive answer. I mean, the variety of institutions this country has, the needs they have for their stakeholders, whether they're public or private. I mean, all of those factors have to be weighed when looking at a student's application. I do think, though, that a test optional, just psychologically, eases the minds of students that are notoriously bad test takers. I mean, I was not a very good standardized test taker. I'm very familiar with the anxiety that accompanies standardized test taking. And it's considered a quote-unquote high-stakes test. I mean, the whole college application system has become very high-stakes. So, but I have to say the young woman that said that she feels confident in other areas of her ability to express herself or to write a great essay. And I think there are students for which those are the challenges. And maybe they are good test takers. They're very strong in math. So there are two sides of that coin as well as to who benefits from a test optional environment.
Well, Andrew writes, I was not a good student in high school due in part to undiagnosed ADHD. The SAT was my only chance to go to a good university. A high math SAT score went a long way to counterbalance straight C's in math. Standardized tests can be a more objective measure of command of the material versus the millions of variables that go into high school grades. Let me go to Monica in Castro Valley. Monica, you're on.
Hi, I was a high school teacher for many years, and one of the things that our school did was we served lower income students. One of our teachers had worked at one of the fancy test prep companies, and he taught all of us the strategies. And really, we weren't, I think it's important to know, we weren't teaching content in that sense for preparation. It was strategies. When do you answer a question? When do you don't? How many points they were taking out? How many they weren't? So much of what people can pay for has nothing to do with actual study or content. So in our first guest, I think he said preparation and study comes from test prep programs, but really there was so much about strategy.
Well, Monica, thanks for sharing your experience. You know, Eddie, one of the things that I have seen brought up is if there are other tests that can be introduced if people are concerned about issues related to the SAT, ACT, the whole infrastructure that's built up around them for test prep and so on. And I think your committee looked at this question, right? Where did it eventually land?
Yes, we were looking at the feasibility of another test that might help us to better understand the student, another data point that we might be able to lean on to better understand that student to determine if they're competitive for UC entry. And through that process, we ultimately decided that there isn't something that is feasible at this moment. There's a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of money in terms of developing a new test. And so the committee decided to continue with the test-free environment, and you know, if there are, you know, other ways that we can creatively make sense of a student profile and make decision, I'm sure that conversation will come up. But for now, standardized test is not part of the conversation at UC.
And Anna, thanks, Eddie. And Anna, you really do think that this digital test, which I understand will be an hour shorter, right, as you were describing there, will be a more equitable kind of test?
I mean, it's an adaptive test, which means that the it measures how well a student does in the early part of the test, and then the questions are adapted to that student's ability. So it's going to be I honestly think it might be a little bit harder, number one, to game the test in the way that that caller said earlier about test taking tips, because it's so new and because it changes depending on how each student performs. So I think it's going to be a while to sort of determine whether it's equitable or not equitable, who is good at this test. I mean, somebody who's good on a pen and paper test might not be as good on a digital test. I tend to think that students these days are so fluid and so comfortable with technology that they will, you know, and it's a shorter test, so it may suit their personalities more than a pen and paper 3-hour test. But an adaptive test is another sort of factor that I'm not sure we can get a grasp on in the near term.
You know, Eddie, we know that the test is linked, or higher scores are linked to family income and even race. But did your committee have a chance to look at whether the test content itself is biased, which has always been a big question that surrounds the SAT, or is that something the UC, or you're hoping the UC will look into?
So we relied, as it relates to, you know, concerns around biases, we relied on existing data and existing studies to really make sense and sort of paint the picture around. On the one hand, there could be some benefits to using test scores and GPA as one factor among many admissions. But we also had a chance to point out existing research, as you mentioned, that standardized tests tend to be associated with one's level of privilege and wealth at times inherited at birth. And so we talked about the stress, the psychological impact of standardized tests on certain students, certain vulnerable students. We talked about the time, the money, the cost associated with these tests that are where we largely see a correlation between test scores of both socioeconomic status and race, right? And so that came up in our conversation, was well documented within our final report that we submitted.
Eddie, am I right in that you would love to just see total reform of our higher education sort of system and the way that we think about who should have access to it?
Well, you know, I think one thing I want to point out here is that largely the conversations that we're having today are around several private schools, Brown, Yale, Dartmouth, and even MIT. Those schools make up less than 5% of all students in higher education, right? And so for me, we're making fine distinctions based on test scores about who gets in. And we've noticed that there are a lot of gifted and talented students that enter higher education. At the time you see required standardized tests, many of these students, anecdotally and based on research, bypass UC to go to community colleges because they didn't see the test scores as something that they were interested in preparing for. They didn't have the resources to put them up to speed to be competitive for standardized tests. So they went to the community college route and transferred to a UC. In the year that we decided to phase out standardized tests, we had record number of applicants. And so what I'm suggesting is that most schools have minimum standards for admission, right? And if we're making decisions based on these fine distinctions, why not come up with other ways, innovative ways that we can admit students across our system, right? That could be in the form of a lottery system. What that might look like needs to be fleshed out. But we are spending a lot of time talking about test scores when we know in higher education, there are many other issues that we must tackle, whether it comes to college affordability, when it comes to the climate of our schools and how we sort of creating inclusive conditions for the diverse groups of students that enter. And so, yes, I'm in the camp of really thinking about how do we radically rethink admissions, particularly when we see a lot of students that are, competing for scarcity of resources and access to opportunities that oftentimes people are excluded, for just the smallest data indicators that would suggest that one might be better than the other. And the last point I'll make here is that, you know, too often we're relying on the good student. What do you have entering the institution? What about the good graduate? And so I think a lot of this is relying on the institutions to come up with support systems to address the needs of students, but also ensuring that this is a space where students feel like they can thrive. So once they get there, they may be deficient in some areas, but that school is able to identify that and address that, ensure that students are prepared as good graduates to contribute to the greater good of society.
Dean Eddie Como, Professor and Associate Dean of Graduate Education at UC Riverside. And let me remind listeners, you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Anna Isaki-Smith is also with us, author of Make College Your Superpower. It's not where you go, it's what you know. So Bob writes, if standardized testing for admissions is mandatory, it should also be mandatory for students to have access to tutoring and test prep for SAT and ACTs. Birdie writes, my high school counselor told me I was not college material. Jeez, I can't believe people say that. Based on my SAT score, and so I believed her. Years later, I went to community college, and I attended the Cal State system, where I earned both my undergraduate and advanced degrees. You go, Birdie. So, Anna, I think one of the points that you and Dean Como have been making really is the way that we should think about elite schools versus a really good education that colleges and universities are providing. Do you just want to say a few words about just the importance of that?
Yeah, I mean, I really endorse what Eddie said. I thought he said it very eloquently and with a lot of feeling. And I agree that there's so much focus on a very limited number of schools. I have to say, though, with the economy, with the innovation economy, there's a trend towards opportunity for a wider group of students, maybe even those that did not go to college. There's an interest in vocational programs, interest in certificate programs. And if you have a good idea, if you're innovative and creative, there's a place for you at the table, much more so than there were than they were maybe even 10 years ago. So like in my book, it isn't where you go, it's what you know, meaning you don't need to go to a prestigious university to succeed in the way that you want to succeed. It really is about what you bring to the table with knowledge, skills, your collaborative ability to work on teams. So I'm optimistic, even whether it's test optional or test required environment, that students will have more opportunities. I mean, these are students that have gone through the pandemic. It was mentioned earlier that mental health of young people is really on the wrong road. And I sympathize with these young people. They've been through unprecedented challenges. So, but I'm happy to say that with the students I've spoken to and in my book, I really do emphasize that there is opportunity for more. You don't need to be an Ivy League graduate to achieve the goals that you want to achieve.
Yeah, you're kind of answering the last two questions I wanted to put to you, which was, you know, many high schoolers are now receiving their acceptances or their rejections. And, you know, any advice about how they can approach receiving that and thinking about their futures and also just what this year's seniors went through with the pandemic?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mina. And I have to say, nobody likes being rejected, whether it's from a school or a boyfriend, girlfriend. I mean, it's nobody likes to be rejected, but in the scheme of things, I mean, if this is for the young people, it really is just it's a blip in your life. I mean, it is, and it's one institution. They really don't know you as an individual. They're not sure about what you're capable of even next year. So as hard as it is to get rejected, just keep in mind that it should not impair on your trajectory. The United States has many fine colleges and universities that will offer you a great education. So you don't need to go to your quote unquote dream school to succeed and to find to be fulfilled. So I'm hopeful that that is a consolation to students that may not have gotten into their schools of choice, but going to college, it is a worthy endeavor. So congratulations to everyone who's gotten those letters.
Anna Isaki Smith, a global education expert and contributor to Forbes covering higher education, UC Riverside professor and Dean Eddie Como. Thank you both so much for being with us. Thank you, listeners, for sharing your experiences and questions. Whew, a lot that we are learning with you all about this. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.